Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel, or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
My wife Janice and I moved into a beautiful new house. It was in an isolated neighborhood just outside of town, and we both loved it. The place was so much bigger than our little apartment in the city, and we got a great deal from its previous owner, Bruce, who had been facing foreclosure. Unfortunately, I didn't get to spend a lot of time at home. I had a pretty heavy workload, and with the added commute time, I really struggled to maintain a balance.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel, or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
I told myself that after a few weeks, things would settle down. Well, this settle down time lasted for over 2 months, and I was still barely seeing my wife. Then, one weekend, I finally had the chance to relax. I went around the house looking for any easy repairs that I could do. It was an old place, but Bruce had kept it in pretty good shape. I was checking out the porch lights when I noticed a piece of technology that I wasn't expecting. Our front door had a Ring camera, and judging by the little shining light, it was still active. This couldn't have been an oversight, because we'd already been here for months, and I was pretty sure people had to pay a monthly fee to keep Ring cameras connected. Well, that could only mean that Bruce still had access to the camera. Every time we walked in and out of the house, he could see us. The thought unnerved me. I barely knew the man, but we hadn't left things on the best terms. He really didn't want to sell his house, and he wasn't happy with the final amount we agreed on. It took me a while to build up the courage, but I eventually called him on the phone. He didn't answer. I thought about calling the police, but that felt like an overreaction. After all, it could have been just an innocent mistake. I know a lot of people automatically pay for subscriptions without checking. That could very easily be the case here. But for a man who was so desperate for money, that didn't seem likely. I went to Janice to ask for advice, but she also assured me that it wasn't a big deal. If it really upset me, then we could just pay someone to rip the camera out of the door. I knew that Janice was right. I was overreacting. But I still felt paranoid. I was more aware of my surroundings, as if I expected to spot Bruce sneaking around the yard or something. But in this more aware state, I noticed that some of our valuables had gone missing. A vase, my grandmother's earrings, some vintage books. I didn't know how that connected to the Ring camera, but it felt like there was something weird going on. Just in case, I logged into my banking website and saw that a very large sum of money was recently taken from one of our savings accounts. I decided not to tell Janice yet. I needed to get more information first. On Sunday, the banks weren't open, so I waited until Monday. I didn't tell Janice that I'd call in sick, so she thought I was still in the office. Instead, I went to our bank and talked with the cashier. She checked their records and saw that Janice had withdrawn the funds herself. I didn't believe her, so she had to call a manager in. I made such a fuss that he pulled me into the back room and showed me the security tapes of Janice withdrawing the money. Absolutely furious, I rushed back home. I was about to charge through the door when I stopped myself. I could hear voices coming from the living room. Through the window, I could see Janice lying on the floor. She was tied up and gagged. A man I had never met before was kneeling next to her, licking her feet. I couldn't let this go on any longer. I ran inside. Janice gasped when she saw me, but the noise was muffled by her gag. The man just froze in place, looking surprised but not embarrassed. Behind him, there were a dozen sets of high heels on the table, plus some stockings and a long feather. "What the hell?" I screamed. The man slowly stood up. Because Janice couldn't explain, he had to. He said that they'd met on Reddit and had been having an affair for weeks. He said that she was tired of being alone all the time, that I'd abandoned her for work, and that I couldn't satisfy her the way he could. By then, Janice had spat out her ball gag. She added, "And that creeper Bruce caught us on video. He's been blackmailing me." Now it all made sense. Not only was my wife a cheater and a freak, but she also stole from me to cover up her affair. This marriage was over. All I had to do was kick them both out of the house and call my lawyer. But no matter what I said, the man refused to leave. I'm a businessman, so I can talk very sternly, but I've never had to use physical violence before. It was clear that no matter what I said, he wasn't afraid of me. After telling him to get out for probably the fifth time, he smiled and walked over to the table. Then he grabbed a stocking and stretched it tight between his hands. He stepped closer. "What are you doing?" "I love her," was all he said. He jumped on me and wrapped the stocking around my neck. I struggled to shake him off me, but he refused to let go. He squeezed tighter and tighter. I couldn't breathe. Janice remained sitting on the ground. At any point, she could have said something to stop her lover, but she didn't. She just watched. Everything was going dark. I didn't have much time left. And then, the front door slammed open and two policemen charged in. One grabbed the man and cuffed him, while the other helped untie Janice. I gave my statement, making sure to leave in every embarrassing detail. I expected them to take the man away in cuffs, but I didn't expect them to take Janice, too. I watched everyone leave, making sure to thank the cops. Once they were all gone, I noticed one more person standing just outside my porch. It was Bruce. He sheepishly walked over and apologized for blackmailing Janice. He said it was the biggest regret of his life. I was about to really lay into him when he added that he was the one who called the police. He'd watched me interrupt my wife's foot play, and when he didn't see anyone leave, he expected the worst and called 911. In the end, I forgave him. He still won't give back the money, though.
Would appreciate if you could hit the like button before moving on to the next story.
My fiancé Bert and I agreed to host our big family reunion. He invited every relative he had to our humble house for a barbecue. His brother usually hosted the yearly reunion, but this year, Bert volunteered our house. I wish he'd told me beforehand, because he knew I'd be the one responsible for everything besides the barbecuing itself. By the time he told me, he'd already sent out all the invitations. I couldn't say no. So on the morning of our big event, we drove to Costco to load up on food and snacks. Bert hated Costco. He hated grocery shopping of any kind, but because Costco was such a long drive away, and because I tended to take my time there, he almost never went with me. He much preferred to stay at home, where he could do all his online work in peace. But this time, I forced him to come with me. We were shopping for his relatives, after all. While I picked out all the food, including the meat he was going to barbecue, Bert wandered around the rest of the store looking for free samples. We split up as soon as we entered, and for the next half hour or so, I didn't see him anywhere. Once I was finally done, I tried to find him. I called his phone, no answer. I asked the other shoppers. They had no idea who he was. I could still see our car through the window, so I knew he hadn't left. He was just being an idiot again. I was angry. We were there shopping for his family, not mine, and he couldn't even bother to stay put while I did all the work. I got in line, figuring he'd find me there, but the cashier was scanning my stuff and he still hadn't come back. The lady asked me what was wrong, and I told her about my missing fiance. She seemed sympathetic, and there wasn't anyone behind me in line, so I pulled out my phone to show her a photo. "Have you seen him?" I asked. She immediately flinched. Her expression had gone from pleasant to frozen in less than a second. "No," she mumbled. "Never seen him before." Obviously, she was lying. She knew what happened to him, and she wouldn't tell me. I gave up trying to ask, paid for the groceries, and left. I dropped all the groceries into our car, but instead of driving away, I walked back inside. I noticed that the cashier I'd talked to was heading toward the back of the store.
"You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once, a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time, and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
I followed her. She was in a hurry, which was probably why she didn't notice me. I watched her walk through a door in the far back corner of the store, behind the snack foods. The door slammed shut behind her, but I was able to see into the room for just a split second. I saw my fiancé. He was duct taped to the wall. Tape also covered his mouth, but I could still hear him grunting for help. And then the door closed. I stood there for a while, trying to process what I'd just seen. Then, once I convinced myself that I wasn't imagining things, I pushed open the door and charged inside. The cashier was standing in front of Bert, while another woman, a cashier I didn't recognize, was in the corner of the room, next to a tray of paintbrushes and bottles of black liquid. Both women looked surprised at my arrival. Bert screamed through the tape across his mouth, only managing a desperate, muffled grunt.
"What the hell are you doing to my fiancé?" I asked.
There was an umbrella leaning against the wall behind me, so I picked it up, just in case I needed a weapon to fight off these psychos.
"He's a bad man," the first woman said, casually sliding her fingertips across his cheek. "He brought this on himself."
The other woman, the one by the paintbrushes, asked me,
"You have no idea what he's done, do you?"
She stepped forward, holding out her phone. She wanted me to read something.
"Let him go!"
I demanded. I knew my fiancé was lazy and often annoying, but he was still a good person. Whatever he'd done in the past couldn't possibly justify a kidnapping. I raised the umbrella, ready to fight them off, but the woman didn't flinch. She just kept her phone extended, waiting for my curiosity to force me to look. And she was right. I grabbed the phone from her hand. Bert tried to scream through the duct tape,
He didn't want me to see what was on that phone. I won't get into the specifics, but what I saw on her phone were dozens of screenshots of text messages and Facebook comments from Bert. His messages weren't just mean. They were threatening and racist and disgusting. "There's more on my phone," the other woman added. "Would you like to see those too?" I turned toward Bert, who had his head lowered and his eyes closed. "Did you write this?" His expression told me everything I needed to know. All this time, Bert had been an internet troll. He spent hours every night on his computer. I thought he was just doing work, but he was obviously using that time to threaten strangers in the most disgusting way possible. I gave the woman back her phone. I'd seen all I needed to see.
"How long has he been messaging you?"
She raised three fingers.
3 years?
I asked. She nodded. The other woman said,
"Just 1 year for me. He became obsessed with me while you two were shopping here last Christmas." "Is that true?"
I asked Bert. I needed his answer. He nodded, looking both scared and broken. The two women waited for me to say something, but I could tell that they meant me no harm. All they cared about was teaching Bert a lesson. And who was I to stop them?
"Carry on," I said. "Bert, come out to the car when you're done."
And with that, I left them there and waited in the parking lot. 20 minutes later, he limped out of the store and joined me at the car. There were fiery burn marks across his face and arms. Whatever black liquid that had painted across his skin must have been corrosive or acidic. He looked like he was in terrible pain. He had enough strength to climb into the car and mumble one word: "Hospital." So I drove him straight to the hospital and dropped him off. He wanted me to wait for him there, but I still had all our groceries in the car, and his family was supposed to come over soon. So I left him there, went home, and got everything ready for the party. When his family came, I told them that Bert was recovering from an accident. They didn't ask any follow-up questions. And honestly, without Bert there, I had a surprisingly good time with his family. After a while, I forgot all about him. A week later, Bert was released from the hospital. He still has a few more skin grafts scheduled for next year, though. I asked him if he was going to tell the police what happened, but he refused. He knew that if he pushed the issue, all of his cyberbullying would get exposed, so I guess he'll just have to live with all his scars. Oh, and I called off the engagement.
When my father died, I did not feel any sadness. All I felt was a deep sense of relief that all his troubles and his sullenness had now ceased. The hope that he would finally find peace encouraged me. My father was not a bad man or a sick man. He was just a man. Perhaps I misunderstood him, and he was more than that. My father lived alone and quietly in a small house he had built in his 30s with my mother before she passed. He was a man who worked hard. It was evident in the fact that the company he started with his best friend was successful enough to keep them in business for 20 years, until he finally quit 15 years ago and said nothing about it. "I don't want to talk about it," he would say whenever he was asked about it. He never lost his composure in the face of the question or gave any indications that he may have a confession at some point in his life, so the questions naturally died away after the first year when he quit the company. For 15 years of his life, after he quit that company, my father never left the house. Occasionally, he would be of good cheer and he would have a drink as he would usually do, so nothing seemed amiss with all of it. But I could sense him hollow out every time we met and spoke. His eyes gazed distantly, like he was staring beyond you when he looked at you. When he was alone, or perceived he was alone, he would move his lips sometimes without actually uttering any words. You could see him ponder deeply when his mind would roam to some intangible place where only he could access in his mind. It was in the way that his facial features would alter itself. His fine nose would wrinkle up slowly in disgust, and his eyes would squint as though he were about to burst into tears. His mouth would quiver, and his cheeks would blush a deep pink. Snapping out of his thoughts, he would suddenly recover himself and continue as though it had not happened. I fear he suffered more than he ever let on in those days. He was a man that lived with the natural stature and humor of his age, but his death had not been unexpected. "Hey, Max. Your father is dead." The call had been matter-of-factly, and truly, I had not felt sadness. I did not ask what had killed him or how he had been found, but I was told that he had been found dead in his sleep on the couch. The rest of the detail as to who found him was numbed out of my senses by a wearing noise of reconciliation that my father truly was dead. I heard what was being said, but I did not understand it. Perhaps out of empathy, the neighbors noticed and they let me be, leaving for their houses while I was alone to handle the rest of it with the officials. His body was moved to a morgue, and I called everyone from the family to inform them of what had happened as clearly and concisely as I could. It was what he would have wanted me to do, I thought to myself, as I sauntered around the house that he called home for 15 years in those moments following his death. In his room, I found everything in order, just as my father always kept it. His clothes had been neatly stacked in the drawers, and all his books were in neat rows on the shelf. I went through his stuff curiously, but I did not dwell on any of it until I encountered an antique box that I had not seen until that day. It was a combination lock piece, which captivated me even in my grief, and I sought to wade to examine what it contained. 1965. I read out the combination lock of his birth year as I slid the numbers on the lock and the box opened up once I had done it. In this box, I found pictures of my father that I had not seen. He was a much different man in those pictures. He had a bright smile on his face. I did not want to stare at it for too long, lest it broke my heart, so I put it away. The box contained letters, postcards, and some paraphernalia from his days as a young man. I inhaled deeply and moved all the stuff he owned from it. The box had to go, I thought to myself, because it looked like it could fetch a good amount of money that would cover a decent part of his funeral cost.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free to play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit moto.us for more details.
I took a few pictures of the box and put it up for sale on eBay. The box sold quickly, just as I expected, and I had enough money for the funeral, which had friends and other family members around. And for the first time in 15 years, I saw his best friend, who told me about my father and how much of a good man he was. In the same breath, he offered to talk to me in private. I obliged him, feeling grateful that he had come anyway. "Listen to me, Max. There is a box that your father and I share. It must be somewhere in this house, protected by him before he died. I want to have it," he said coolly, his tone firm and his eyes unwavering. "What box?" I retorted, giving him an unamused look. "I can find it. You just have to permit me so I can search." He maintained the same cool demeanor. "Have some respect. You'll do no such search," I spat back at him, angered by his audacity. "You don't understand.
If that box gets out of this room, all of my life's work is done and I go to prison. That is not a risk I want to take, he threatened. I did not understand the implications of it, so I insisted that he would not search the house. Matter of fact, I said to him, he had to leave the funeral. In a flash, he pointed a gun at me, and he didn't seem so cool anymore. I felt the blood in my veins clog. Staring into the barrel of his gun had my spirit levitate from my body. I gasped for breath in fear that he perceived that fear in me. I have no qualms putting a bullet through your brain if that is all it will take to get to the box. Now tell me, where is it? He appeared deranged, like a mad scientist. It filled me with so much horror that I started to babble. With one hand, he pushed back the safety of the gun. Without thinking, I lunged at him as a shot went off. Shit! He cussed as he scrambled towards the gun, realizing it was too late to do me any harm as the gunshot had alerted the neighbors and funeral attendees who would call the cops. Frightened to the point of blindness, I ran with no idea where I was running towards, with my only thought to escape him. When I was in a room in the house, I examined myself to ensure I had not been shot. The police came some moments later, but he was gone with the rest of the funeral attendants. With the box gone, I knew I also had to go as far away as possible from where he could find me.
I usually stayed away from my husband's office. There was nothing wrong with his company, but the building itself was in the one part of town that I never wanted to visit. Every once in a while, you'd hear about disappearances and random shootings in the area. A lot of people said that it was all mafia-related, but honestly, I didn't care. I just wanted Parker to be safe when he was at work. Because I didn't have a job of my own, I had a lot of respect for what he did. He was a great provider. Even on an office worker's salary, he always did buy me expensive presents and took me on trips. I felt like Parker and I had a great life together, but all that changed when I made a surprise visit to his office. Parker had been dealing with some work stress, and I decided to surprise him with a homemade lunch to cheer him up. He knew how much I disliked visiting his office. It was something we'd argue about a lot, so I figured a surprise visit would mean a lot to him. Unfortunately, I never actually got inside his building. I was still in the parking lot when I heard screaming and choking noises from the side of the building. They lasted for about 5 seconds before abruptly stopping. I peered around the corner and saw one man standing over a dead body. His back was to me, so I couldn't see his face. He had a rope in one hand and a murder weapon in his other. I backed away so the man couldn't see me, and then pulled out my phone. I pressed the power button over and over, but it wouldn't turn on. I needed to charge it. Just then, the front door burst open, and Parker ran out. Sammy, did you see anything? I hugged him tightly. I could barely get the words out, but I told him what I'd seen. He immediately pulled away and grabbed his own phone and dialed 911. I was so impressed by how calmly he relayed all the information. He ended the call and told me, "The officer said that we should leave right now for our own safety. They'll send someone over to the house and get the statement." I was so glad I didn't have to stay there any longer. Parker and I got in our separate cars and drove back home. As I pulled onto the street, I looked once more at the murder scene. The body was still there, but the killer was already gone. Parker wasn't kidding when the FBI agent was parked in our driveway waiting for us. He had sunglasses hiding his face, but he looked friendly enough. After we got out of the car, he introduced himself as Agent Bradford. He said that the murder I'd witnessed was mob-related, so the police immediately asked him to protect me. The agent explained that he'd take me temporarily into witness protection. I'd have to stay there until the killer was captured, at which point I'd be called in to testify. I didn't even have time to pack. Agent Bradford said that the house was already prepared for my arrival, including all the clothes and toiletries that I needed. Time was of the essence, so he had to relocate me immediately. Parker and I got into the back of his government-issued vehicle and drove us right out of town. He took us high into the mountains, along side roads instead of the main highway. After about an hour on those winding dirt roads, he parked in front of an old secluded cabin. We all got out of the car, with Parker carrying my suitcase. Agent Bradford unlocked the front door, giving me a quick tour of the tiny single-story cabin. It seemed like a miserable place to stay. I prayed that I wouldn't be cooped up here for that long. Agent Bradford checked that I had everything that I needed. Then, once he was satisfied, he said that he'd head back to town and check on me in a few days. He reminded me that I had to stay in the house, no matter what. I thanked him for all the help. "Of course," the agent said. "Parker, are you ready to go?" That's when I started to panic. Until that moment, I assumed that Parker and I would be sequestered here together. I hadn't even noticed that the agent only brought a suitcase for me. Bradford explained that Parker wasn't allowed to stay with me because he hadn't seen the killer. I had. It didn't really make sense, but before I could argue, he kissed me on the mouth, and then Bradford and him hurried back outside. "I'll come back soon. Just hang out. Have a rest," Bradford called to me as he drove away. I started to scroll through my phone when I realized that the cabin didn't even have internet. I tried to call Parker, but I didn't have reception either. I was completely cut off from the rest of the world. Even though I started to panic, I felt this sudden urge to take a nap. It was still mid-afternoon, but I guess all the trauma of the day had drained me of energy. I lay down on the sofa, and I would have immediately fallen asleep if a couch spring hadn't poked me in the back. I stood up to adjust the cushion when I noticed a slip of paper on the ground that must have fallen out of someone's pocket. I unfolded it, revealing the blueprints for Parker's office with the red X drawn exactly where the murder happened. The more I stared at the paper, the more I started to panic. Who made this? This must have been left here before the crime occurred, meaning this cabin wasn't really a safe house at all. It was where the killer and his accomplices had planned the murder. Agent Bradford wasn't really an FBI agent. He was duping us. In fact, he had the exact same build as the killer. Maybe they were the same person, and Bradford had intercepted Parker's 911 call or something. Unless I was overreacting. Parker always scolded me for jumping to conclusions. Maybe there was a simple explanation. But just to be safe, I started walking around the house to see if there was anything else I could find out that was out of the ordinary. I couldn't find anything. Plus, it was really hard to concentrate. All I wanted to do was take a nap. When I walked into the kitchen, I noticed a soft hissing noise coming from behind the oven. I peered over and saw that the gas line had been cut. No wonder I was feeling so tired. The whole cabin was slowly filling with odorless gas. If I had fallen asleep on the couch, I would have been killed. Covering my mouth, I unlocked the back door and raced out. I looked at the thick forest around the cabin. There was nowhere to go. Then, I saw movement coming from the dirt road. Agent Bradford's car was driving back. I crouched down so no one could see me, and I watched as both Bradford and Parker stepped out of the car. They were talking and laughing. I couldn't hear them at first until they got close enough to me. Then Parker said, "You go switch off the gas, I'll grab the body." Parker and the fake FBI agent were in this together. I felt like screaming. How could Parker, the love of my life, do this to me? How could he be so nonchalant about grabbing my dead body? But I just kept quiet as both men walked inside the gas-filled cabin, each covering their mouths. The window in front of me was just open enough. I lit a match and threw it inside. Then, as I ran as fast as I could, I avoided the explosion. That served them both right.
I was working abroad in Zanzibar doing a social outreach program with the local governments. It was great to live on a tropical island. I really loved it there, even though I was so far away from my home. I always told my family that they had to come visit me. I grew up in Nebraska, and no one else in my family had any interest in traveling. Just me. I'm really the black sheep of the family. As soon as I graduated from college, I was out of the country, working all over the world, mostly in East Africa. But as soon as I settled into my new house in Zanzibar, I knew that this would be the one place that I could convince my family to come visit. Last summer, my brothers and my mom finally agreed to come stay with me. My dad had to work, sadly, but he probably wasn't going to come anyway. Honestly, I was surprised that my mom agreed. She'd barely been outside of the States, and she was a very timid, shy woman. I wanted her to visit me and have a good time, but I was worried about her too. There were some dangerous parts to the island, and I didn't know if she could handle herself. After they flew in, I picked them up and we took an Uber back from the airport to my house in Stonetown. I took them around to the markets, and I really think they were having a good time. On our first full day there, my brothers were too hungover from the night before to do anything. So I took my mom to one of the nicer beaches on the north of the island while my brother slept in my house. Mom and I didn't have any plans except for hanging out on the beach, swimming, and drinking some pina coladas. We laid out on the beach for a bit, watching the waves. There was a coconut man nearby. He had a big machete and he kept chopping into coconuts and selling them with straws. There were a few other tourists on the beach, and there were also some beach boys. If you don't know, beach boys are the local guys who walk around popular beaches, showing off their extremely chiseled physiques and flirting with older female tourists in an effort to land a sugar mama. They were so obvious about it too. These beach boys would start exercising or doing beach yoga directly in front of the tourists and smile at them periodically, waiting to be invited over. And that's exactly what happened to my mom. I had just gotten into the water to swim for a bit, and when I came back out, I saw one of those guys flexing and working out. I saw my mom smile at him and call him over, and I saw them talk to each other. The man put his hand on her shoulder and probably gave her a compliment about her giant sun hat or something. I knew I had to get over there and stop it, because beach boys like this guy would not take no for an answer. They'd always wait for you to initiate a conversation, but once that happened, they were on you like mosquitoes. I stepped between them. "Hi," I told the beach boy. "I'm Dave." The man just glared at me. He knew that I was getting in the way of his plan. "This is Malik," she said. "We were just talking. Why don't you go get us some mango juice?" The juice stand was on the other side of the beach. Obviously, she wanted me to leave. I'm really bad about arguing with my mother, so I walked off. I hoped that she had some sense when she was with Malik. She was a married woman, after all. By the time I got back, I saw Malik giving my mom a back rub. Not cool. I charged over there and asked him to please stop. "Don't ruin my fun," Mom said. "He's really good." I looked directly at Malik. "How much do I need to pay you before you leave?" I asked him in Swahili. "Let us alone," he told me, also in Swahili. Mom didn't know what we were saying, but she could probably hear the tension in our words. "It's okay," she told me. "He's just being friendly." As she said that, I noticed Malik glance at my mom's purse. I told her back at the house not to bring too much money with her, but I had the feeling that she didn't listen. She probably had a ton of cash on her. "Mom, I think it's time to go," I said. "I'm getting sunburned." "Oh no," she said, and she jumped to her feet. I knew that would work. Since we were kids, my mom was always paranoid about us getting sunburns. She thanked Malik and then reached for her purse, but he grabbed her wrist before she could pick it up. "You're forgetting my payment," he said darkly. "You said you wanted to rub my shoulders," she said. "You didn't say anything about payment." 20,000, he said. Mom shook his hand away and took her purse, but Malik didn't back down. He stood in her way, puffing out his chest and looking as threatening as he could. "It's too late, Mom," I said. "I tried to warn you. Just pay him and we'll leave." She looked at me like I was a total idiot. "No!" she screamed and tried to walk away. Malik let her go. I thought that was the end of it, but then he ran over to the coconut man and grabbed his machete. Then he raced after us. I've never been more scared in my life. Not for my own safety, but for my mom's. Malik's eyes showed pure hate. Who knew what he was capable of? If you don't pay me, he said. He waved the machete through the air. Just pay him, I shouted at my mom. Okay, okay, she said. She started digging through her purse. Malik waited for the money. He still held the machete really close to my mom's face. But instead of pulling out her cash, Mom pulled out a tiny bottle of pepper spray. I'd never seen her move so fast. She blasted him right in the face. Malik dropped the machete.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
I thought Mom was going to turn around and run away, but she didn't. She picked up the machete, grabbed Malik by the shoulders, and held the blade up to his neck. Tell me you don't want any money, she demanded. I don't. Tell me it was an honor to rub my shoulders. He didn't say anything, so she pushed the machete against his skin. Mom, stop, I said. But she didn't. It was an honor, Malik muttered. Mom thanked him, and then casually handed the machete back to the coconut man, who was standing there in shock. Then, Mom walked back toward me, said we were going to stop at the nearest store and pick up some aloe vera for my skin, and walked away. I followed her in total disbelief. When we got back to my house, my brothers asked me if we had fun at the beach. I told them what Mom did, but they didn't believe me. For the rest of the trip, I wasn't worried about my mom at all. I knew she could handle herself.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.